Happy birthday, Are We There Yet? This is Anthony from the Main Engine Cutoff podcast and the Off Nominal community. Thank you for what you do. You are incredible.
Hey, Brendan. Jake from We Martians here. What a huge milestone for you guys. It's so exciting to have another Mars podcast to work with and collaborate on. It's been such a delight to meet you and be a part of this show. And so I just wanted to say from all of us Martians up here in Canada, happy birthday and congratulations. Bonne fête et félicitations. Here's to another 2 years.
Hey there, this is Emily Speck with WKNG. I just wanted to wish Are We There Yet podcast a very happy second birthday and thank Brendan for bringing us one step closer to Mars with every single podcast. I'm so happy to be a part of it. Happy birthday!
Hey Brendan, this is Chris Gebhardt with NASA Spaceflight calling to congratulate you and wish the Are We There Yet podcast a very happy second birthday. What makes Are We There Yet a truly worthy exploration of our achievements and desires in the final frontier is the in-depth knowledge and breadth of perspectives you and your guests bring to each episode. It is an honor to be a part of this podcast, and to borrow a phrase from my favorite TV series, may Are We There Yet live long and prosper.
As you now know, we're celebrating our second birthday. When we first started thinking about this podcast way back in the fall of 2015, we had no idea what would come of it. Would people listen? Would guests take us seriously and come on the show? Would the idea fizzle out after just a few episodes? Well, after the first few episodes posted, the response was incredible. We'd hoped for maybe 100 downloads in the first month, but instead we were getting thousands each day. It sent this podcast on a trajectory much like the rocket launches we cover. There was an incredible amount of energy that propelled the podcast forward, launching it to the stars and beyond. And honestly, those first few months, I was holding on for dear life. This program never seemed to slow down. Fueled by the passion of our listeners, this spaceship of a podcast continues to explore space exploration and the passion that drives us to reach for the stars. Without the listeners, our engines don't work. I've enjoyed every single moment of this crazy ride on our spaceship, and I have you, the loyal listeners, to thank. So thanks for keeping us going for 2 years. We've reached incredible heights, and there's no end in sight. The team here at WMFE Radio in Orlando, Florida, is super excited to release the Are We There Yet podcast mission patch. It's a 4.5-inch mission patch that chronicles our crazy journey through the solar system on our way to Mars. And you can get your own by visiting WMFE.org/patch. And by making a gift of financial support to this station, we'll go ahead and send you one. We started working on the patch a few months ago, and we commissioned mission patch designer Tim Gagnon. We wanted a way for our listeners to support the program, and I think we found the perfect thing. We officially released the patch last week, and before the unveiling ceremony, I spoke with Tim Gagnon about the patch and his career as a mission art designer. Well, joining me in the studio is Tim Gagnon. He is an artist, and he is the designer of the Are We There Yet patch that we just released. Now he's got it sitting right in front of him. Tim, thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure. So glad to be here.
Let's start with the patch. Tell me about it. It's so cool.
Well, I, like with every other project, I researched what you guys do, and you're trying to ask the question and provoke discussion about our future in manned space human space exploration, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to use that as the guidepost for the design.
Mm-hmm. It's a really, really neat-looking design. Big patch. It's bigger than I thought it was going to be.
Well, the typical mission patches are generally 4 inches, mm-hmm. but I did a slightly larger. It's 4.5 inches high. And then with the two elements on the sides, it's 5 inches wide.
Mm-hmm. You and I talked about the ideas that we wanted for it. Mm-hmm. You kind of had creative liberty on this one and came back with an amazing design.
Well, not all clients give me creative liberty, so you guys are very generous.
We're more than happy to after seeing the final product. So that was a gamble, but it worked paid. Kind of tell me, you know, not just with this patch, but mm-hmm. Where does your mindset go when you're designing a patch?
I try to illustrate the thoughts of either the mission crew or another client. What story do they want to tell with their patch? And try to imagine myself into that image. You know, what would I see? What would it look like? And then just illustrate it. And we go back and forth with the client. And sooner or later, we get to a point where they say, yeah, this is exactly what we want.
Now, you designed a patch for a podcast with a host that pretends he's an astronaut sometimes, mm-hmm. but you're a big deal. You've actually and you're very humble about it, but you've actually designed some actual NASA mission patches, right?
Yeah, I've been very, very fortunate. I started writing to astronauts in 1973 after reading an article by artist Frank Kelly Fries on how he designed the first increment, the first Skylab mission patch. The numbering system is a little bit skewed. The patch says Skylab 1, but they considered themselves to be the second Skylab mission. So, but he detailed the entire process. It was like giving somebody a roadmap. And when I read that article, you know, I'm terrible at math. I'm not much better in science.
Well, that's why we're creative,
but I knew,
right?
Exactly. But I knew this was a way I could participate and I could contribute because I've been drawing ever since I could hold a pencil. And, you know, once I read that article, I said, I can do this. Mm-hmm. You know, now I just have to get a chance.
And so what's the process? So you actually have to solicit the astronauts and they have to pick you personally to design the patch, right?
Yes. And not all crews do that. You know, the astronauts I've always admired and respected, but, you know, some of them are even artistic. I mean, God forbid they have a PhD and, you know, 10,000 hours flying jets, but some of them know how to paint and everything else. So not every crew selects an outside artist to work with. And you just have to be in the right place at the right time. And it only took me 31 years for a crew to say yes.
Talk about that first patch you designed.
That was for the 11th mission to the space station, Expedition 11. The American astronaut was John Phillips. The commander of the flight was Sergei Krikalev. And they were originally intended to have a three-man crew, but when the foam came off the orbiter on the STS-114 launch, the third astronaut was supposed to be launched on the STS-121 to join them during that increment, and that schedule got pushed aside, so they remained a two-person increment. And we started working on that in the late spring of 2004, and I finished my part of it in September, and then they released it in February of 2005. Mission launched in April.
And how much input do you get from the astronauts who are commissioning you? What's the process?
It's actually they provide excellent feedback. I initially start out by researching the mission. I do up a few sketches, and I submit them to them. And then they start picking and choosing. Oh, we like this. We don't like that. Let's change that. And then we do another round and go back and forth. And generally, you work with one member of the crew. And in this case, it was John Phillips. And he contacts, you know, he gets with his commander and his crewmates. And then they come back and either email or phone call or some other means and say, okay, let's do this part differently. Let's keep this and let's change that. And eventually back and forth, you get to that final design.
And after that first design, was it a lot easier to get more astronauts to give street cred?
It really was. It took a couple of years to do another mission patch. The first shuttle mission patch was STS-126. But after those two successes, the 126 crew told the 127 crew, who told the 129 crew. And so, yeah, it became a lot easier.
How many have you done in total for NASA?
Five space shuttle mission patches I've been involved with. And to date, 14 station patches.
Talk about some of the symbolism you have to use in these patches because, I mean, it's needlework. You can't get too much detail on these.
There are very strict guidelines that you get because not only is it for embroidery, but it's for printing. It's for different things. And while you can use a gradients in a print, you know, when they make the vinyl decals or print envelopes or whatever, you can't do that with stitching. You can't, you know, have that soft change. So if you research the STS-129 patch, there are actually two official versions. The sun that is embroidery friendly for the patch, and then a different sun for the vinyl decal and print.
Where did the idea for mission patches come from? I mean, is this something that's exclusively for NASA? Or
no, it goes back to, I think it goes back to the medieval times. Coats of arms were really the first emblem that that soldiers would fight under. And it's basically a way to garner esprit de corps. The initial Mercury astronauts were all from the military. They had all had nose art on their airplanes. They had squadron patches in the Navy and so forth, in the Air Force. And so when they started flying, I call her the first lady of mission patch artists. That's Cece Bibby. And she painted the Friendship 7 emblem, the Aurora 7 emblem, and the Sigma 7 emblem on Glenn Carpenter's and Shiraz Mercury spacecraft.
Oh, wow.
So that was really the first mission patch. That was the art that represented
on the capsule.
That mission. Yeah. And then it kind of, you know, was sidelined for a little bit. But Gemini 5 was the first crew to have a mission patch. The Gemini 3 and Gemini 4 had emblems done up. They actually flew medallions. And they wanted to get that art approved for an official patch. And NASA kind of poo-pooed it for reasons of their own. And finally, Cooper went to the administrator, James Webb, and said, look, we want to have a patch to represent our flights. You know, we've been flying under these types of emblems ever since we joined the service. And they finally convinced whoever made those decisions that this would be a good thing. And but they weren't commercially available to the public until about 1970.
And since then, they've become – they're like Pokemon, you know? You've got to collect all of them. Like, it's huge in the space.
There's a few of us crazies that collect all of them, yes.
There's a lot of them. There's a lot of – what's the kind of appeal to collecting these? Why does somebody
it's
like –
It's just, you know, you want – you if you're like me, you're a big enthusiast of the program. And you want to have a sense, you know, I appreciate the artwork that goes into it. You know, I've studied the artist behind each one of them, because while all the crews are credited for designing their patches, frequently they turn to an outside artist. Most of the time, you know, that artist gets one shot. But there was a Rockwell engineer named Alan Stevens who did the Apollo 1, Apollo 7, Apollo 9, and Apollo 10 mission patches. So he was the first guy to do more than one flight. Then Barbara Metelsky did Apollo 16, and she did the second Skylab crew, the one with the Vitruvian man. So frequently, astronauts will work with an artist they get to know. And so, but Bob McCall was the first time I had experienced a patch in person. My dad and I went down to see the launch in 1972 for Apollo 17.
Wow.
And, of course, that patch is everywhere. So, and I fell in love with it. I mean, it was the perfect Apollo emblem. I mean, this is what it looks
gorgeous.
Like. It shows the Greek god Apollo looking towards the future. And I was just in awe. I mean, that's the reason 17, seeing that launch live was the reason 17's my favorite mission.
And we have to tell our listeners, since it's a podcast, you are decked out in your flight jacket. With
yes,
all of
I definitely wear my heart on my sleeves. Yeah.
And your tie. I love that tie. Yeah. So that's kind of all of the emblems from it looks
well,
like.
Well,
this
tie I got at the Space Center, at the gift shop, is Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, and Skylab mission emblems.
Okay.
I'm hoping one day they will come out with a shuttle series or a station series.
That'd be a big tie.
So I can wear my own artwork.
Now, you speak of all these artists that are commissioned to do these work. I mean, there's got to be just a few of you folks that do this, right? Or a handful?
Well, there's more than you would realize. I've just been very fortunate to do as many as I've done. When I started writing, I felt, okay, if I get one shot, great, because, very few artists got to do more than one. And I've just been very, very fortunate. It far exceeded any dreams a 16-year-old kid had in 1973.
Now, did you guys talk shop? Do you offer tips to each other? Is it very
competitive? Oh, sure. I mean, I know a lot of the other artists that are outside of the agency. And I've got some friends in Belgium and in Europe that have done Soyuz mission patches. And so we talk back and forth and, you know, we get to hear the stories behind some of the patches and why that design is that way. And so, yeah, it's not a large community, but it's very close-knit.
I'm going to say I love collecting them as well since, you know, covering the space beat. After every successful launch that you cover, you get that patch. So I've got at my desk all the patches of all the missions that I've covered before.
It's
an emotional connection that you have to these, you know, amazing
machines. I mean, those patches mean something to you because you cover those missions. The thing that I'm in awe of is that 200 years from now, some descendant of mine will look up a mission and artwork that I helped create will become the forever symbol for that mission. Once they're attached to that mission, it's there forever.
It really is such a permanent kind of fixture of that mission. You know, the hardware comes and goes, the people come and go, but that patch is forever, right?
That's right. That's right.
So, I mean, what do you see as the future? Is there going to be – how has tech changed this? I mean, are these always going to be physical patches?
Maybe in some way. There was a time in the early shuttle program where NASA was talking about just using the triangle-shaped program emblem with the mission designation underneath it. They weren't going to have individual mission patches.
That didn't go over very
the
well.
The astronauts said, we're having mission patches. These are guys, you know, they train for a long time, and they work very hard to get the opportunity to fly, and they want their name on a patch. And so as long as astronauts have that mindset, there will be mission patches.
Do you have a favorite that you've worked on or a favorite that you admire of someone else's?
Well, it's like asking me which one of my kids I like the best, but one that is very special is the 133 patch. Because when I was writing to astronauts all those years, most of the time they would always be gracious when they said no. But a lot of times they said, we already chose an artist. And frequently that artist was Robert McCall. Now, Robert McCall was like, he was the aerospace artist. I mean, he did the artwork for 2001, A Space Odyssey.
All
those stamps. You know, he did amazing. Incredible artist. I can't say anything more gracious about the man. And so I finally wrote to him in 1982, you know, and here I am saying, you know, all right, I'm going to get the secret from the guy himself. And he gave me some excellent advice, but it wasn't what I wanted to hear. I wanted him to say, yeah, call this guy. I've already talked to him for you, and, you know, you'll get the next job. But the advice was, you know, study the great art of the past, come back from inevitable failure with courage and things like that. And he even did a sketch on the envelope when he wrote back. So I have an original McCall, you know, sketch.
So cool.
In a frame in my office. When the 133 crew was chosen for that flight, they were going to be the last shuttle mission. And so they went to Bob McCall to design their patch because he had done the very first shuttle mission patch. Perfect bookends for the program. Well, he did a couple of initial sketches, and then he passed away. He was 90 years old. And so the crew came to me to help finish the patch.
Oh, wow.
So it was like being given Michelangelo's paintbrush by the Pope and said, yeah, finish this ceiling. It was very daunting. I didn't want to mess with it, you know. And luckily, the crew didn't want it changed a lot either, but there was still work to be done to finish it. And so that mission has always been a very special. I never say I designed that patch. I helped work on it. That's all I did.
Can you describe it for us? Because it's a gorgeous patch.
Yeah, and it actually, you'll notice the orbiter on the patch. It's flying without the external tank and solid rocket boosters because they wanted to highlight the orbiter alone. But you can see, compared to other missions, it's a very rough sketch. And it shows it in a brilliant launch plume. And the stars that are falling away from it, the crew was hoping for was the after effects of a firework explosion where you see those little spots of light falling back to Earth. And the plume at the top, it can be considered the Earth rim that's lit, or it can be just the launch plume. They wanted to have things to have double meaning. And then there's 6 5-pointed stars for the crew and a big gold star next to the orbiter at the top. And we put that there for Bob McCall. And then there's 2 small similar stars for Dr. Jorge Kartz and I, because he has been a partner in doing mission patches since STS-126. And the size of the 2 sets of stars are on purpose, because this was McCall's work and we just tweaked it a little bit. Now, one small thing that not many people notice, but I found out in researching, a lot of artists did back in the day, is we put our initials into the exhaust plume at the bottom. A T for me, a J for Jorge. And it worked because my daughter's name is Trish, my son-in-law's name is Jason, my grandsons are Tyler and Jack. So, you know, we figured we'll put it in there. It might get discovered, it might get wiped out. But when NASA released that emblem, the T and J were still there. And I found out that the graphic artist at the Johnson Space Center that worked on it was named Terry Johnson. So we were safe.
It all worked out.
So it's been a very special patch, and it means a great deal.
Did you hide anything on the Are We There Yet patch? Are you willing to admit it?
No, I didn't. I figured, you know, do that once in a while, but you do it all the time, and you start to get to be obnoxious.
Now, you're someone who has so much passion for this work, and you've been around the industry for so long, talking about seeing Apollo missions and being around for these shuttle days. I mean, what do you see the future of space exploration here in Florida, and especially or maybe even around the nation? Do you see people still collecting patches in 5, 10, 15
years?
You know,
I do. I remember being very disappointed. I worked for a company during the end of the shuttle program. I was a NASA supplier, and I got laid off in 2010. And, of course, thousands of other people did too. And so I was in pretty much of a funk in the end of 2010, going into 2011. And, you know, because remember, everybody kept saying, we remember what it was like when Apollo shut down. It won't be like that this time. We've learned our lesson. And it was tougher than it should have been. But I blame Congress, and that's a whole other interview. But I went to the National Space Symposium in 2012, and I got to see some of the exhibits and go to some of those panels. And I came away from that experience very, very much with a changed mind. It was very exciting to see all the work that I wasn't aware of going on. And I can't speak highly enough for the way NASA and the people involved, Space Florida and so forth, have turned KSC into a multi-user spaceport. So diversification, the support of the commercial industry, the future is very bright. Mm-hmm. It's just, and I see a lot of support in the public. Mm-hmm. A lot of college kids that, you know, you see them on social media, you meet them at events. And they're very enthusiastic. They want to participate. And my 6-year-old grandson has never met a rocket launch he never liked. You know, he wants to see rockets. So if Jack gets to be a decision maker, there's going to be lots of rockets.
Wonderful. Well, Tim Gagnon, he's an artist and the incredible designer of the Are We There Yet Space podcast, Patch, and many others. Thank you so much for your hard work and for speaking with us today.
My pleasure, Brendan. Thank you for having me.
Be sure to check out the patch yourself at wmfe.org/patch. A huge thank you to all the guests on the program after the past 2 years. And another shout out to you, the listeners. I can't wait to see what's in store for this year. Support for Are We There Yet comes from those listeners. Our theme music was composed by Kevin McLeod. You can join the conversation online. We've got a Facebook page. Search for Are We There Yet podcast. Or you can take to Twitter. The show is at AWTYMars, and I'm at Space Brendan. You can find more space news online at wmfe.org/space. And until next time, I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.